The Fieldhouse Files is brought to you by GameTime, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Did you know that Pacer tickets tend to drop right before the game starts? GameTime tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, then shows you all the best last-minute deals. With prices up to 60% off, more than 12 million fans have downloaded the GameTime app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. It's amazing. I was looking online to see what it costs to attend an upcoming Pacers game. You can see the Pacers in Charlotte for $4. How about the Wizards at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, where the Pacers are playing their 20th season? Just $3, and that's only at the Game Time app. And while you're there, you can see the in-app panoramic seat view to see exactly where you'll be sitting. So head to the App Store or Play Store now to download Game Time and score awesome deals on last-minute tickets. And welcome into another episode of the Fieldhouse Files. Pacers now 3-3. Winners of their last three games after an atrocious start, losing three in a row, but not entirely unexpected with such a new group and now a rash of injuries. And so that and more we'll discuss on this episode of the Fieldhouse Files. And down in San Antonio, I welcome in my co-host Dave DeFore. Dave, feeling better, I hope, right?
Yes, I've fully recovered from the early season flu. Hopefully that means I'm not going to get the flu when it's actually flu season.
And it sounds
that's how it works, right?
Sounds like the Pacers are on that same path right now. Struggled early on and have recovered a little bit here in this last week.
Yeah, we're all just trying to get by at this point.
What were your early impressions of those first few games? And I will say I'll start. And it was just poor. It was unorganized. It was turnover filled. And a lot of guys questioning kind of every decision out on the floor. You could see them going through progressions and unsure of where to be. And those pretty much we call growing pains, I think, early on.
Yeah, it felt to me like two guys knew what they were doing, and that's Malcolm Brogdon and Domas Sabonis. Everyone else looked lost. And this is the sort of thing that I expected coming into the start of this year, you know, missing Thad Young and missing Victor Oladipo. And the importance of those guys on the offensive end for Oladipo and then Thad Young, obviously, on the defensive end. This first six games, I think you can look at them and you can say, clearly they are missing these two guys in particular. Yes, Turner out with the ankle injury the last few games. That hurts him. And Sabonis out in the last game. But the big one is missing Vic and missing Thad Young. It's going to be a rough first month, 2 months, I think, while they're sorting this stuff out.
And I think that goes for everyone on this team. Brogdon has been a lone bright spot, really, in this first month. I mean, he courted in those losses. He still had double-doubles and was doing something like 25 points, 13 assists, and just a couple of turnovers per game. So I think the early returns on Malcolm, Dave, have been better than expected.
He's playing at an all-star level.
Yeah,
the
I
first
agree.
Six games of the season. I mean, he's up at 22.5 points a game, you know, almost 10 assists, almost a steal and a half, half a block. He's not turning the ball over a ton, less than three a game, which, you know, he's got the ball in his hands so much right now. That's pretty incredible that he's able to create so much and yet protect the basketball. He's looking like a steal. Now, it's six games, so, you know, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but he is doing everything he can to keep the boat afloat while they're dealing with all these injuries. And I mean, really, he's done more than you can even ask of him. His shooting has been insane. He's getting everyone involved. I think he's an all-star.
No.
I think he's going to be an all-star. Like, just in this role, it's kind of like he's thriving in it, and I think he's going to get the opportunities. He's going to the free throw line almost six times a game. That's incredible for Malcolm Brogdon.
And the best part about it, of course, is his conversion rate, where he's, I think, made all but one foul shot on the season. So he's getting there and knocking them down. He's been a good leader in the early going. He's really the only vocal guy while Vic remains out, and that's been an early challenge for this team. Even Malcolm, in his own right, he's not a natural, loud, outspoken guy, but he's forced himself into being one. And I think it's what's incredible is the number of touches for him that are up from last year, and that's just a matter of not playing alongside Giannis. So he's having the ball in his hands a lot more. He's creating. And I'm curious what you think. I've been impressed so far in his burst and his ability to go from the top edge of the circle to go right towards the basket and almost every time beat his man. The only other guy really on this Pacers team is Victor who can do that.
Yeah, I think it helps when you have good screen setters. And Nate McMillan, I know, is a big proponent of actually making contact, being physical with your screens. And that helps a guy who doesn't have the greatest first step in the world. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon is not some, you know, Victor Oladipo level of athlete. But he is smart and he's big and he uses his body effectively. And I think that, you know, kind of his ability to change pace where he, you know, he can go slow and still be effective. That makes it when he does try to have that quick first step, it looks faster. It's almost, you know, it's like a Greg Maddux fastball at 89 miles an hour looked really fast because his changeup was 73.
Weeknights are made for basketball, but the weekends, yeah, those are often all about football. And the DraftKings Sportsbook app can make your weekend even better. This week, DraftKings is running a first touchdown score promotion. Just bet on the first touchdown score in any primetime pro football game and get protected with your wager back if they score at any point in the game. How's that for insurance? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the code FAST. For a limited time, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's code FAST for all new and existing users to get a deposit bonus up to $500. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Indiana only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITHOUT. Yeah, so we're beginning to see that in a short glimpse in practice, too, where he goes 1-on-0 or 1-on-1, driving from the corner and stopping on a dime at the three-point line and occasionally taking it inside. So you're absolutely right. While Malcolm is not at his level, he offers that dynamic, I think, that threat, which in turn also opens things up for his teammates. Now, what they've really been struggling with in this early part of this season has been injuries. Victor continues to rehab. Good updates, but nothing really new on that front. In Detroit, Edmund Sumner suffered really a broken hand. And so he's going to be reevaluated here in about 3 weeks. But this is a key rotation guy that was ready to take that next step, really in his true second year. And so losing him as your second guard off the bench is hurtful. Then you lose Miles Turner, twisting his ankle. It's a weird situation in Brooklyn where the defender plowing over him through a screen really twisted that ankle, and they were fearful originally. His dad was there, his agent was there,
yeah.
And originally they were really nervous about what might happen, especially when he needed help get back to the locker room. But it turned out it was not bad as they first thought after the swelling, and it was incredible, Dave. I'll tell you what, at practice today, he lit up. I mean, he went one on O. He was by himself just running drills really with the coaches, but really did not look like he missed a step at all. And so that was a good sign. I don't expect him to play for the next few games, but I think his return is closer than we believe. And they need him there on that back line of the defense.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what this team, you know, has been missing early on is defensive cohesion, and having a guy who was in the running for defensive player of the year last year is vitally important, especially, and I'm going to listen, we could just call this the Thad Young podcast because I cannot overstate enough the importance of Thad Young to last year's defensive team. They can't afford to not have Miles Turner out there for the next, you know, 3 weeks. Now, I think he's going to miss some time. I mean, ankle injuries are rough, and I never expect people to bounce back fast. You know, I think we've been conditioned to believe that a sprained ankle is a nothing injury. It's 2 weeks. Truth is, these are the kinds of injuries that can derail your entire season. They can lead to knee injuries and hamstring injuries and hip and back and all these other things if you come back too fast. And so my hope is that the Pacers, you know, yes, they're looking at this season, but they need to take a long-term approach to this. You know, this isn't going to be their year. Bringing back Oladipo, you know, from this injury and with all of the other factors, I think that they know this. So I hope that they don't sacrifice the long-term vision of what they're trying to build to try to rush Turner back so that they can make a playoff run. That's my only hope with this injury.
Yeah, I don't see it that they would do that because of those circumstances like you just laid out. I mean, this is not about this year. It's about building cohesion and building the togetherness, to use their word, to make a push at it, to make a run at it next year when everybody's at full strength and you have a year under your belt with this group. But in the meantime, we've seen Sabonis play a couple games, but then he got hurt, and it's unclear if he's even making the trip to Charlotte. I would guess not, but that decision hadn't been made as of this recording, as he suffered a bone bruise when he woke up the other morning after the team's win over Cleveland. It was just terribly sore. I saw him before the game. Their win over Chicago over the weekend, and he was limping around in the locker room. Now, the big thing with Sabonis, the key for him is the fact that it's just a bruise and not a strain, because if it's a strain, then you're looking at a unpredictable and a longer timeline. Whereas a bruise, I think generally he could wake up in a couple days, feel good, and get back after it. But losing Turner was a bad thing. Compounding the issue now is Sabonis out. So we've seen all kinds of lineups, including Goga Bitadze, the rookie center, getting the start last game.
Yeah, and listen, I'm of the opinion that Goga should be getting rotation minutes. But clearly he is not there defensively.
No.
And I mean, it's such a huge drop off from Miles and even Sabonis to Goga.
Good offensively. You can tell he's comfortable and confident at that end of the floor. I mean, he's not passing up those 3-point shots. He'll get it at the elbow. Guy's sagging off, so he'll shoot it. I like that. But it's a completely different scenario at the other end of the floor where he's kind of out of place. He's sliding over. He's always looking to the bench maybe for advice. It's just not there, and that's not unexpected for a rookie.
Right, right, absolutely. And I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's young. He's going to need to, you know, develop his body to be able to compete in the NBA, clearly. But the mind part of the defensive end, he just looks lost. There were a lot of times where he didn't know when to show. Clearly didn't know all the coverages. That stinks. But again, this is a young guy. He's 20 years old, first year in the league. I'm sure by mid-season he'll have this stuff sorted out, but he definitely isn't there today. And you know, this is not the West, luckily. You know, the East, you've got a little bit of time to go through these sorts of growing pains. It doesn't get late as early for the Eastern Conference teams. But you can't afford to, you know, they're 3-3 right now. They can't afford to be, you know, 4-6, 4-8. They need to get these guys back, get them healthy, and you know, start to win some of these winnable games. Like, they need to beat Charlotte. That you have to win against the Charlottes of the world. You have to, you know, you've got to beat the ones that are easy, because there's too many nights that are not easy, especially right now. You know, there's so many competitors.
They're at a favorable point in their schedule. Now, they lost those first three, and in part it's because of the bigs, and the Pacers always struggle with the bigs, like Tristan Thompson, with Andre Drummond, with Joel Embiid, and so I guess perhaps that was unlucky for a new group, and then the fact that they are always dominated on the interior against those guys. Now, rebounding has been a little bit better, and perhaps, Dave, they found something here playing small. That's what they've done in the last three games, and it's been effective. The whole thing with all this, though, that is interesting, is once they get the key guys back, talking about Turner and Sabonis and eventually Sumner, is McMillan still not sure then what does he do? Do they continue playing small ball? Probably not, because they need to make it work with the two bigs. They are devoted to making that work, or at least seeing what they can get out of it for this season. And so then once they get those guys back, I think it'll be interesting in terms of, is there more growing pains? Because I'm fully expecting for that.
Yeah, but they need to really look at this small ball thing, because it feels like it's putting more of their guys in position to succeed rather than just Miles Turner or Sabonis, if that makes sense. I mean, TJ Leaf probably had his best game of his career.
Yeah.
13 points, 15 rebounds.
Career high rebounds in a limited amount of minutes, 22 minutes, yeah. I think.
Looked very effective, which, you know, people that have followed me for a while know I'm not the biggest fan of TJ Leaf. I don't know if he's an NBA player, but he looked like one in this game. And it's because he's able to play that small ball five. And this is what, you know, you need to set these guys up for success. So I think we're going to see more of the small ball. I definitely think we're going to see more of T.J. Warren at the four, and Doug McDermott at the four, and probably those two sharing the court a lot together because of the shooting. But TJ Leaf at the five, it's a different wrinkle for them, you know, and they can get out and run a bit. So, yeah, I hope that they stick with it some. I think there's still a way to do it once Sabonis and Turner are back. And I understand that the concerns about them playing together is causing McMillan to stagger them quite a bit when they were both healthy. So they were both getting minutes without the other. But you shouldn't do that at the expense of the rest of your team. You know, you need to play everyone to their ideal conditions, let's say.
They're at that difficult spot where Turner and Sabonis are two of your best players. So how do you maximize the amount of minutes they can play on the floor? But in turn, yeah, you raise a good point, because a guy you didn't even mention has most impressed me, and that's Justin Holiday. When he's been playing that four spot, I think of him much like Thad Young to an extent. Last three seasons, is he's their utility man. He's never going to get all the credit. He's going to knock down some shots. He's going to score in transition, but he's mostly going to defend and do the little things. And playing Holiday has led to some winning basketball these last few games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of those guys. I mean, you know, he's 30 years old. How does he stay in the league, right? And it's because he does all this stuff that you need out of a guy coming off the bench. And he can play one through four if you need him to. And again, he's going to be able to take advantage on the offensive end when he's got bigger guys on him. The defense, you know, that's going to be rough, but they're having a rough time of it anyway, so they might as well score.
And the challenge with TJ Leaf and playing him is his lack of physicality. He's 6'10", but he's only like 225, maybe. And he always gets knocked over a little bit on the defensive end. He's a little bit of a step slow, but on the offensive end, he prefers playing inside out, whereas most people think of him as an outside in type of guy. And this I wrote on The Athletic for Monday after the team's third straight win. It's been a frustrating start to the season for him, and we didn't even mention his injury. He suffered a quad injury that set him back during training camp. He still doesn't think his conditioning is where he would like for it to be, and he had to miss a couple of preseason games. And what was interesting, Dave, too, is the fact that in the team's first win, he didn't play. And so that had a lot of a buzz on Twitter. And now he's made his mark in the last game. I just don't know if they can come to expect that every single game, especially once they get their key guys back.
Probably not. You know, it's a minutes crunch, you know, and that's kind of how these things tend to work out. Unfortunately.
Yeah, no question. By the way, I should mention this while we're on the subjects of the TJs and Holidays. It was really cool last night, talking about Sunday night against the Bulls. I think it was the final minute of the first quarter. We finally saw the full house lineup, if you will, where it was all three TJs and both Holiday brothers in there. Both so holidays, I thought that was really cool. And most of the players that I talked to after the game had no clue. So it was something cool that happened, and not by design by any means.
Yeah, that's what a quirk.
It's so odd. Funny. There are three TJs in the NBA, and the Pacers have cornered the market. They have every one of them.
It's an interesting strategy.
And they used to have TJ Ford.
Right. Gosh. So if your name is TJ and you play in the league, you're destined to play for the Indiana Pacers.
100%. No, it's made things interesting here for this last couple games. And one thing I do like is I think Aaron Holiday is a better player with his brother, but he's the one other guy in this whole conversation that's kind of lagged behind, and I think, in his development to start this year. He has been a disappointment in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rough start for him, and you know McMillan likes him, right? Because he's still getting a chance, and he does compete, but it's just not – just not showing up in the box score where it really needs to. I mean, they need him to be that. I think they need him to step up and be that third guard off the bench or the first guard off the bench. He needs to be the guy who can come in and get him some points in that second unit. I think that it's very clear that's what they're missing. I think he's probably not shooting enough, if I'm being honest, because he's got the ball in his hands quite a bit. I think he needs to actually be a little bit more aggressive. I'd love to see him attacking the basket more, but I don't know if he's that guy. You know, it's early in his career, but he's a little bit older coming into the league, and this might just be who he is, but he needs to shoot. So if he can become like a 36-37% legitimate 3-point shooter coming off the bench, that would be huge for them.
I think he's been playing hesitant. I think he's looked over his shoulder a little bit as TJ McConnell has got a few more minutes per game and entering the season. We were even wondering, you know, is McConnell that third point guard that is playing sparingly in terms of just when there's an injury? But no, McConnell's been usually the second or third guy off the bench and always in before
him.
Aaron. Yeah, no, he's absolutely earned it as well.
Yeah, he's outplaying him, which isn't saying much because I don't think TJ's really been that great offensively in particular.
Well, he's not going to give you much, I don't think, offensively. You expect that. What he is he'll take care of the ball. He's going to attack knowing he can't really go anywhere or put the shot up. So then he has great court vision and is finding guys in the corners and hoping they shoot away.
Right, because he's definitely not going to shoot from the corners.
Exactly. I guess defensively, I will say it's been laughable to watch, but he is good for one of those tricky steals after a made basket. He fakes like he's running down the floor and then runs back and steals it. No one really does that much in the league. Yeah. He's been getting at least one of those per game, so that's been fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think Jeremy Lamb's kind of growing into his role a little bit more. He's averaging almost 17 points per game. He missed a couple of games with an injury early on. So really the only guy not to suffer an injury is thus far has been Malcolm Brogdon in recent past because TJ Warren missed half the season last year due to injuries. Lamb's very quiet, not a big interview guy. I think he's still trying to very much feel his way with this situation and learn where he can take his spots and knock down jumpers. What I really have liked from him, and it doesn't work right now with Sabonis out, but the two-man game between those two and the pick and roll, that they were able to maximize that quickly and often, I think, when those two were on the floor together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jeremy Lamb is a guy, you know, and this you could say this about the entire Pacers team. 4 3-pointers a game is just not enough. He's a good 3-point shooter. He needs to get that volume up. I mean, he's up to 17 points a game, which is great, but I think with increased volume, he could be giving you 20 a night right now while you really need it. Because you don't have that scoring punch from Miles Turner and obviously no Oladipo. But it's a bigger, small part of the bigger problem, which is that as a team, they're just not generating enough looks from three. I mean, they're dead last in 3-point attempts.
And that's interesting to me. I even brought it up to Coach McMillan today at practice, the fact that they're averaging less than 25. I think that's lower than last season. And they went into this year wanting to play faster. The pace isn't quite where he wants, but that's understandable with so many guys out of the rotation. And the threes have suffered as well. Yeah, they're not getting many of them up. They're never going to be that team that comes down and launches them. Nate made that clear as well today. But right now, he's not even focused on that, maybe the right word for that, considering the lineups again. And yes, he would like more. They set the goal at the beginning of the year to be 30, but right now that's very low on his to-do list and of a priority for this group as they try to just get by.
Yeah, they're down 2% from last year, but they're also not really shooting it well. They're shooting 32% as a team. And so the combination of not shooting enough and shooting them poorly is really what's shooting them in the foot right now. They could improve their offense quite a bit just by, you know, trying to get like 10 more 3-point attempts a game.
They're already
an extra 9 points a game.
And they're already scoring over half their points, I think, inside the paint where we've talked about their bench. That was a big area of concern through those first 4 or 5 games where they're averaging less than 20 points off the bench. I mean, they weren't getting any production. I think Doug McDermott's off to a little bit of a slow start. We saw the other night in a win over Chicago. So many good looks, and they just weren't dropping for him. But if they, like we talked about, I think before, if they could get 10 to 12 points from him every single game, that would be huge. And in these last couple wins, they have gotten 35 points per game off the bench, and that's key. On the positive side, they've done a really good job after a troubling preseason in taking care of the basketball. This is very much what we've come to know with this Pacers team in terms of being efficient with the ball, taking care of it, and assisting. They're trying to get 30 assists per game, and I think they almost came upon that the other night in a win of Chicago. So they're slow and steady progress.
Yeah, they're in the top half of the league in assists per game, which you want to see. And like you said, they don't turn the ball over. I mean, they're second for lowest turnovers in the league. They're only averaging 13 a game. That's incredible. So they're setting themselves up for good success. But there are still functional things they could be doing. Again, the more three-point shots would be great. Attacking the basket more. They're not going to the free throw line enough. you know, that's always going to be an issue. And that's why I pointed out Brogdon going six times a game. That's massive. But Miles Turner needs to go five or six times a game. Sabonis needs to go five or six times a game. You know, these little things add up. And this is where that Sumner injury is really hurting them, because they have no scoring punch off the bench. And he at least, you know, was showing flashes of that. And so he needs to get back. Again, this is the story of the Pacers season right now is all about what they don't have.
No, you're 100% right. It's been bit by an injury bug, and it's not to the level of the Golden State Warriors, of course, but they're missing those key compartments. I thought it was interesting, Dave. I looked around the locker room before the game, and there's new decorations and such off, but I was looking in the middle of the room, and four lockers in a row are all four of the injured guys. It was remarkable, just the coincidence, I think, of that with Victor next to Miles Turner, next to Sumner, next to Sabonis. None of them had jerseys. They were all closed, and it was kind of a depressing thought when you think about it. It's the beginning of the year, and the core of this group isn't in uniform.
Yeah, I don't like to jump to judgment on teams, and six games, clearly not enough. But there's three teams in the league that at this point I have no idea what they're going to wind up as. And the Pacers are one of them. It could work out and be amazing. Well, we don't know because everybody's hurt. Also, you know, the trip to India didn't help.
No, it didn't at all. I'm curious, how many games do you usually like to start judging? For me, it's probably into December. That's the 25, yep. 30 game mark.
Yeah, I'll start getting like my thoughts about a team. Will start to form around game 15 or so. And then by game 25, you kind of know what they are. Now, again, this is barring injury, which this team has a major injury in Victor Oladipo. So we won't know what this team is. You know, if he comes back, let's say January, it'll be March before we really know what this team is going to be if they make the playoffs. And they could be out of it by the trade deadline.
Of note, right now, as currently slotted, the Pacers would be in seventh in the conference standings with a 3-3 record, just below Charlotte, who they play on Tuesday. So they are in that picture here early on. I think that is always interesting to track early on, because generally they don't change too much barring an injury. So it's Philly, it's Miami, it's Boston, right. Milwaukee, Toronto, all right there. And I think, if anything, Miami has impressed more than I expected, and Orlando has not.
Right. That's exactly where I am. Miami looks way better than I expected. Orlando's offense is really struggling. Their defense is amazing, but the offensive end is really struggling. You know, this is not Orlando Magic podcast, but a lot of that has to do with Aaron Gordon struggling, and then John Isaac struggling to find his role in that offense. And I think they're going to sort that out. They've got a very good coach. So I expect them to figure that out by the time it's all said and done. But, you know, usually around Christmas Day, January 1st, we kind of know who the playoff teams are.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, when people say, well, these games don't matter, it's so early, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know that the season's long. But if you go back and look, January 1st has been the best predictor for what the playoff picture is going to look like than anything I can come up with. It's January 1st. The standings are usually pretty close to what you wind up with in the playoffs. Like you played about, you know, 25, 30 games or so. You got a pretty good sense of who teams are. And, you know, unfortunately, this team has just been bit by the injury bug. So I worry about them losing some of these winnable games, like this game against Charlotte, who, you know, has been frisky. They've been, you know, they've been better than we expected. I don't think that they're this good, but I think they're catching teams off guard, catching teams on their heels, because they're not expecting the Hornets to come out swinging like they have. And they've gotten some hot shooting nights. P.J. Washington's been really good. Devontae Graham has been really good. So they're getting production out of places that I wouldn't expect them to maintain. But for a team like Indiana, they need to pick up these wins now, because they count the same as a win you pick up in March.
One other thing I do want to note, because it's somewhat been concerning but also somewhat been hilarious to watch on the bench, and that's Victor Oladipo's activity. He barely sits down during games, Dave. It's fascinating to watch, really. Usually
yeah,
cheering.
I'm like that as a coach.
Are you?
Yeah, I live and die like with every possession. And it comes from being a player, you know. Yeah, I really, really live and die with every single shot. So I feel it. And you know, being a former player, there's a part of you that wishes that you could be out there playing. And I think that's the coaches that are standing up and pacing and walking a lot. That's where that comes from. So I can totally sympathize with Vic and what he's going through.
I think that's a situation where you have no control and it pains you, right? Like you need a shot, or you want to score out of the timeout or something like that, and you have no impact on the game. Now, what is cool is we have seen him pull guys aside, like Edmund Sumner, Goga at times, those sorts of things, and a lot of the guys have been very good with those newcomers. But it almost concerns me sometimes, Dave, because the other night against Chicago, there was a time where he got up too quick and his phone went flying on the baseline. There was another time when an opponent almost rammed into him because he was so far out down that baseline, like two or three photographer spots in. I was surprised he didn't get warned or anything by the officials, actually.
Are you advocating that the league needs to step in and issue a technical to Victor Oladipo?
No, what I'm saying,
I can't believe you do that, Scott.
So what I'm saying, Dave, is one of his teammates or the coaches need to be like, hey, Vic, we like you standing, but remember, you're injured. Let's lay low a little bit more if you could.
Yeah, it's a good thing for him to be out there and with the guys. You know, he missed time with the team last year. I think it's very important as far as his leadership role goes, and it'll help his integration into the team when he does come back and is ready to play, because he's been out there, you know, yes, he's in a suit, but he's been out there with them, sweating, cheering, all those important things.
Yeah, that's a very good point, considering the fact that last year he strategically stayed in Miami and rehabbed alone throughout the second half of last season. Now he's at every practice, every game. Just about. He may not travel to the one-off, so I'm not expecting him to go to Charlotte, for example. It's just not worth the 24 hours. But the support has been good. I just feel like it's been a little bit dangerous a couple of times. That is all.
Yeah, he's toeing the line, for sure.
Anything else jump out to you about this Pacers team as we wrap up this episode?
No, I think the big thing to watch is going to be Malcolm Brogdon. Can he maintain this sort of production? I mean, because he has been really good, mm-hmm. surprisingly good. But this is by far the highest usage of his career. I mean, he's up to 27% usage, which is extremely high. That's superstar-level usage. Can he maintain this efficiency with the increased workload? Can Jeremy Lamb help him out a little bit, get a few more points on the board? And then can they tread water while these guys are hurt? And you know, if the other night's any indication, they're going to be able to beat the bad teams like the Bulls, which – wow, the Bulls are bad. But can they beat the frisky teams like Charlotte? That's what we're going to find out next.
Turner could be back within the next week or two. Sabonis probably the next week. I would say Sumner out at least three more weeks. That's when he'll be reevaluated. Then Oladipo continues to rehab. So, yeah, it's just fighting until then, until they get guys back, and then maybe rethinking things and starting over to an extent with this group. Dave, I appreciate jumping on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Again, the Pacers are 3-3, wins over Brooklyn, Cleveland, Chicago this week at Charlotte, then their first back-to-back back home against the Wizards, and then it's the Detroit Pistons once again on Friday, the third time in 9 games facing the Pistons. So they'll soon be done with that matchup, but it is a real opportunity for them to get ahead in the standings and stay afloat, really, as they're in that get-by mode until some players come back. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to the Fieldhouse Files wherever you get your podcasts, but we highly recommend subscribing to The Athletic to read all my stories and all of our other coverage throughout the NBA, or with Stephen Holder, Zach Kiefer, Bob Kravitz here in Indianapolis if you're talking about the Colts. You can use our promo for 40% off the annual price at theathletic.com/Fieldhouse Files. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Fieldhouse Files, and we'll talk to you again soon.